Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. ESG, or Environmental, Social, Governance, promises to help the bottom line and the planet at the same time. Is it too good to be true? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of an episode digging into that very question.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point, and today, our weekly series of voter roundtables. We're listening to people who will be voting in an American election for the very first time, newly naturalized U.S. citizens.
My name is Maureen Michaelis, and I am calling from Spokane, Washington. I am a Canadian who became a U.S. citizen on June 12, 2020, after living in the U.S. as a resident alien for 35 years.
My name is Beata Schmid. I actually became a citizen on Valentine's Day last year, after living in the States for 40 years. I'd lived in Sweden and in Germany. I came here to go to grad school. I like the diversity, and even though it's perhaps a little bit of a myth now, the American dream.
My name is Grant Scott. I was born in London and moved to the U.S. 35 years ago to marry a girl from Needham, Mass. I like living here, and America has been good for me. My naturalization ceremony was this morning at the John Joseph Moakley Courthouse in Boston. The proceeding was conducted outside, and 33 of us from every corner of the world swore the oath, collected our certificates, and froze in the cold.
Now, those are just a few of the country's newest Americans who called us to let us know what they think about casting their ballots as U.S. citizens for the very first time. Now, as we've been doing every Wednesday over the past several weeks and on until the election, we are assembling groups of Americans to talk about who they might cast their ballots for, and more importantly, what their hopes and dreams are for this country. And as I said, today, we're going to be hearing about those hopes and dreams from the nation's newest citizens. So let's start with Ahmed Azuvedi. He joins us from Beaverton, Oregon. He's a community liaison for the Beaverton School District. Ahmed, welcome to On Point.
Hi, thank you.
So when did you become a U.S. citizen?
Before 3 days ago.
3 days ago. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What was that moment like? What was the ceremony like?
It's a huge, as my son described it, it's a dream come true, because honestly, I was dying to get my citizenship before the election. So, I was super stressed. Even, the funny things, it was, same day I entered the United States as a refugee in 2014. It was, September 19th. And my ceremony or my test was September 19, same day. Hmm. So, it was I don't know, maybe it's a sign, a good sign for me, because we it was smooth procedures, and it was a huge, it's a dream come true.
And why was it a dream come true? Why was it that when you stood to and raised your hand to take the oath of citizenship for the United States, did that feel like the culmination of something important to you?
For many reasons. Honestly, I'm in you for democracy. I live in Baghdad, and I lived in Saddam regime almost for 36 years. And as you know, and we didn't know what the election mean, till I arrived here, or till 2003, we didn't know what the election mean. Mm. And I involved with all election happened in Baghdad after 2003 till I moved. And I know how much important even one vote can make a change. So it was something emotional for me, something I feel it's a desire. I need to do that. I feel this is my responsibility as an American citizen to make a change or to vote, because this is not just a right, it's responsibility.
So you said you saw in Iraq how one after 2003, how or the importance of how even one vote could make a change. Now Ahmed, can you tell us a little bit more about what you left behind in Iraq? Because I hear what you're saying. First of all, what did you think of the United States during the invasion and then the long post invasion period in Iraq?
To be super honest, our information about the United States, it was just what we saw on Hollywood movies. Till now, my mom, she thought I live in neighborhood. There's drug dealers and everything, gain and shoot gun everywhere. So because this is what we saw in the Hollywood movie in the other side from the world. But when I traveled, because I was a senior correspondent embedded with U.S. Army, so I traveled to the United States almost three times before I moved in. So honestly, what happened there in Baghdad, when you have a pain in your teeth and you need to pull it out. Mm. You need to do that, but how you will do it, you need to go to a professional dentist to do that. What's happened there, United States or the government at that time take some mistakes. Maybe they didn't know very well the environment there. You need, again, you have cavity in that teeth and you need to pull it out. That's it. But how you will do that doesn't matter now because you already pull it out.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So you worked for, you said you were an embedded correspondent. You worked for Radio Free Iraq. And I see here that during the post-invasion period in Iraq that you helped create something called the Baghdad Press Club.
Yes. It was a place when U.S. Army arrived to Baghdad and they didn't, people, they thought the duty for the army is just destroy. But at that time they was doing good things rebuild hospitals, schools, resource, all those things. Someone need to cover that, not just the bad or the negative things. So when we sit with General Dempsey at that time, we told him, hey, we need to do something to deliver those positive things, not negative things. So we need a place to sit and you will send someone from U.S. Army to give us a briefing every day. So we call it Baghdad Press Club at that time. In Baghdad airport, because it was a base for U.S. Army at that time. And day after day, I discovered I have 3,000 journalists from different countries, not just Iraq. So we extended to actual organization. We call it CIVIC. It's Center for Exchange Information between press and the officials any commanders or any officials from U.S. government. So we built that bridge to deliver messages, mm-hmm. and we did a great job. Example, we covered Saddam trial, yeah. all other activities.
So let me ask you, Ahmed, following the invasion, as you mentioned, Iraqis had their first taste of casting ballots in an election that wasn't ruled by a dictator. Iraq is still building its nascent democracy. Mm-hmm. But yet you felt like you had to leave. Why did you have to leave, and why was America the place you wanted to come to?
I left everything behind, my family, my house, my job. Even I was very famous there, and many people respect me and reach me when they have any things. I was a resource. I reach a level. The procedures will take a long, long, long time because people live there without any election for almost 45 years. So we have many generations, like almost four, five, six generations. They don't know anything about election or democracy. So they follow what the religious people say. They follow what the politicians say. And we have half of the people there, they are not educated. So they don't have any clue about what the election. So they heard like Ahmed, he will elect X or Y people. They go with Ahmed because they don't know how to do it. So you can buy vote, and the corruption there, like, it's all high level. Like, even you can be a prime minister if you have enough money. So it's so dark there. And, like, I know there is, like, some people, they are optimistic, but for someone, he lived entire his life there, and he was a journalist, and he know all the politician and how the things goes. There is no hope right now, especially after U.S. government withdrew the army from there. And it was like a huge mistake because we delivered Iraq and Golden Blade to Iran to occupy it. Yeah, so it was like a huge mistake, honestly.
But if I may, Ahmed, specifically regarding why you had to leave Iraq, I'm seeing here that because, I mean, you were under threat, right? That you moved, what, 11 different times in the course of 13 years because of fears for your safety?
Yes, it was like a huge concern about us. I threatened like three times. I almost killed two times. I moved 11 times because because I need to change my place. And even my wife, she didn't allow me to get into my car till she searched it. And every time when we remember this, she sit and cry. Yeah. So it was like a huge for us.
So Ahmed, stand by for just a second. I have to take a quick break. And okay. I want to talk with you a little bit when we come back about being an American and what your hopes are for your new country now, because we've heard what you left, what you had to leave behind in Iraq. So let's talk about America now when we come back. We are listening to newly naturalized U.S. citizens and what they think about casting their very first ballots in November. We'll be back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken? A podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. A recent episode featured a debate about ESG, or environmental social governance.
This sounds like more work than just putting your money into a social impact fund.
It's a lot more work.
Yeah.
Anybody who thinks there's an easy solution here is either engaged in puffery, greenwash, or deceiving themselves.
Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the episode.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. It is Wednesday, so we are doing our latest installment of our weekly series of conversations with American voters, voter roundtables, about their hopes and dreams for this country over the next 4 years. And today, we are talking with this nation's newest citizens, newly naturalized U.S. citizens. And I am joined right now by Ahmed Azuvedi. He is a community liaison for the Beaverton School District in Beaverton, Oregon. He is originally from Iraq, and he just became a U.S. citizen 3 days ago. Now, Ahmed, you described to us about what you left behind in Iraq, which I can't imagine that was easy. Was it hard?
Of course. Like, each time, you know, when you remember your family, your mom, dad, and you, like, when someone tells you, like, they are sick or something like that, like, you cannot do anything here. Mm-hmm. Even if you want to travel, you will arrive after 2 days, 3 days. So it's super hard for us. Yeah. But like, thanks for God, we have like social media. We can communicate through it. Like, I will tell you something funny. Like my mom, she keep her retirement salary, and she don't know, like she don't have any clue with technology, but she save her like her retirement salary, and she bought a smartphone and asked my like my youngest brother to create a Facebook page for her so she can communicate with me, because you know I'm 24 mm-hmm. hours on Facebook like as a like a blogger, or like keep watching news around the world. So she can communicate with me, because, you know, like communication from United States to Iraq is so expensive. So this is the way we try to communicate with our right. family there.
So when people come to the United States, they're obviously leaving something behind. There's a reason why they had to leave or felt compelled to leave their home country. But they're also coming to something. They're coming to the United States to fulfill something in their lives. So I'm wondering, mm-hmm. in the years since you have been here, what is it that you had hoped to achieve, and have you been able to do that?
Honestly, when I just arrived, I found my community here is like divided too. So we try to build the bridges, and it's so hard because everybody thought he's the right and the other side is strong. So honestly, till now, I can say I achieved some dreams. Like example, my citizenship or naturalization. Now I'm citizen, I can vote, and this is my dream from day one. Now I can follow my kids' future, because education is better, health system is better, even the environment is better. Mm-hmm. I know it's expensive for my family to live here. Now me and my wife working, but it's a better for my kids. So sometimes I feel it's sacrifice we need to take it to build a good future for our kids. Other hand, we start like to be like a community leader. I got many training to be like a community leader with Unite Oregon. And like now I have my own organization. We call it the Arabic House. It's focusing on education to keep to encourage people to keep their home town language, because like how much we are diverse, how much we will be strong, mm-hmm. and it's a benefit for the United States to have many people they speak two language or three language, because it's a desire, or like some like we need that, like especially with the new arrivals. Or like to be in like an interpreter in health system, all those things. So it's good for our community to anyone who came from outside the United States and he speaks more than one language.
Well, I just have two more quick questions for you, Ahmed, and you've been very generous with your time.
Okay. No, you're so welcome.
You will be casting your very first ballot as a U.S. citizen. I guess in Oregon it's vote by mail, so you'll be putting it in a mailbox. But who are you going to vote for?
It's very hard for me right now. Some people they say it's like it's easiest election because everybody know to whom they need to vote. But for me it's so difficult because I don't like how Trump deal with refugees and other like other issues. And on the other hand, Biden, he was having project when he was like vice president with Obama to divide Iraq religiously, like to make it like three state, like through religious. So it's very difficult for me to make a balance with whom I need to go. And I believe I will go with Biden.
And what are your hopes and dreams? What do you want for this country, your new country, for the next 4 years?
Of course, be Alexa Trunk, and now I feel with all the hate in the environment, this is not healthy, and we need to back as a one, like one union country, because now we divide it, honestly. Like, if you go to any place, even they cannot have regular discussion about election. They, like, you will see angry everywhere and, like, hate, and this will be, I don't like that, because that will give me same feeling what we live in Baghdad, because there, like, they have same divided things, but they have a lot of guns there. We don't have a gun, like that much gun here, too, and we don't have those kind of militia to kill people. But I don't want like to freeze that level one day. But again, we need to end this hate in the atmosphere, and we need to decide what the better for future for our kids, not just ourselves.
Well, Ahmed Azuvedi is originally from Iraq. He just became a U.S. citizen 3 days ago. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we spoke to a lot of newly naturalized Americans in the course of preparing for this hour. So let's listen to a little bit of a conversation we had with Norma Huerta from Mesa, Arizona. She volunteers as a teacher who helps people in her community prepare to become U.S. citizens. And here's what she told us she hopes that her students take away from her lessons.
To fall in love with the country, with the land. And I know they already are. And I know just to respect its people and to follow the rules and to educate themselves, to be part of this big, humongous community.
Huerta was born in Mexico. She became a U.S. citizen herself in 2018. And she says she's been pained by some of President Trump's comments about immigrants.
I mean, you basically feel like he's talking directly to you because I'm an immigrant. But even though I'm an immigrant, I'm not a rapist. I'm not committing crimes. But when your leader, your president is saying those things, you feel like they're going directly to you, even though it's not true.
But Norma Huerta says she still isn't sure how she's going to vote in November.
I feel kind of nervous, if I can say it, because I don't want to make the wrong decision based on what you hear or how you feel emotionally. What you hear is just fighting and negativity. And it is sad that I have to make a decision for my first time based on that.
That's Norma Huerta from Mesa, Arizona. Well, joining us now from Albuquerque, New Mexico, is Fabiola Landeros. She's a community organizer originally from Mexico. Fabiola, welcome to you.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. And also with us from Tampa, Florida, is Violeta Cruz Perez. She's a real estate agent originally from Cuba. Violeta, welcome to you.
Hello, how are you? I'm fine.
I'm doing well. Thank you both for being with us today. So you will be voting for the first time as U.S. citizens in November. Fabiola, first let me just hear from you. When did you become a naturalized American?
I became a U.S. citizen in May of last year.
May of last year. And what was that moment like for you?
It was a really exciting moment, really powerful moment to know that now I have the right to go and help to choose the next leader of this country.
Mm. And Violeta, when did you become a U.S. citizen?
Last year, too, in January.
In January of last year. And that moment for you when you stood up to take the oath of citizenship, what was that like?
Well, first, thank you for the presentation. An immigrant from Cuba. And my point here is about who we are about. I listening my friends, virtual friends. You can repeat the question, please.
Yeah, no, I was actually, before we talk about politics in particular, I was just wanting to hear from you, Violeta, about what it felt like to you on the day that you became a U.S. citizen. What was that day like for you?
Oh, that is an amazing day. This is more happy day for me in this country, because I know the importance to exercise my right to vote and know the people. When you don't have this right in your country, you know the importance for that.
Mm-hmm. So that's what I want to hear from both of you on before we talk about what's going to happen in November. So Fabiola, tell me more about what is it that made you decide to leave Mexico, to come to the United States and become an American? Why did you want to do that?
Well, first of all, because my older kid was born here, and I decided to just bring him back and give him the chance to grow in his country and have the opportunities. At the same time, I saw that being here, I have more opportunities to help my family in Mexico. And at that point, when I came to live here, it was in Mexico, was the things in Mexico weren't good. It was a lot of crime. The war on drugs that was going on. So I felt that for my safety and my kids' safety, it was better to came to the U.S. Mm.
So for your safety, you came to the U.S. And then why did you decide to take the next step, though, and become a citizen?
Because in my work, I'm a civil rights organizer with my organization, El Centro de Igualdad y Derechos. And my kids... before I started with this organization, my brother was detained and he was deported to Mexico. And my kids told me once, like, hey, mom, the only person who can be deported is a U.S. citizen. And we are afraid for you that this administration thinks that you or the work that you're doing is not good and you can be deported. So between my kids and my partner convinced me to do the next step, and that's why I did.
Mm-hmm. And Violeta, for you, when you came from Cuba, first of all, what was the reason why you felt like you had to leave Cuba and you wanted to be in the United States?
Yes, the first reason is the communism. I lived in Cuba for 23 years. That communism is destroyed my country for more than 60 years, has separated family and broke all rights of the entire town. And I know what you're talking about.
Tell me more.
Okay. Like my favorite writing from my country said, I live in the monster and I know the inside. And this applies for that. My experience is my country. So it is the first thing. And the second is for my children have better opportunity for their life. And they can do whatever they want in this an amazing country. And they can do their dreams and me too come true. Work very hard. Just believe in you and you can... do whatever you want. You are freedom. You are right.
And so you said, and you feel like you can do that. You can do that too, not just for your children. That's a feeling that you have about being an American.
Yes, for the future of my family.
For the future of your family. Okay. So then, tell me regarding that future. Fabiola, let me just ask you first, what are your hopes and dreams for this country for the next 4 years?
We've been seeing for the past 4 years that our communities are being criminalized, targeted, persecuted, detained. And even right now, we're seeing that it's an equity in race and economics, because right now we are essential workers. But when we talk about health for workers, we are not that essential. So for me, for the next 4 years, we will have someone empower working with my community, with my families, with the Black community, immigrant community, refugee community, that they're going to help us to do the next step. That for many of us is to become a legal permanent resident and then citizens. And right now we're seeing that that's not going to happen. We're seeing that we don't have value as a human person. So for me, it's having someone that has the same values as we have and taking the lead and change this past 4 years.
Okay. So Violeta, when you hear Fabiola say that she's hoping to for the next 4 years for whoever will be the U.S. leader, to that this is a person who would empower working people, empower the immigrant and refugee communities, is that a dream that you also have for this country?
Yes, sure. My first point is I don't want the communists. I don't want the people. I don't need the people talk very well or very apologize or very empathize with the person. So we need the leader. We need the person believe in his country and the people living there. Mm-hmm.
So Violeta and Fabiola, hang on for just a moment. It's time for us to take another quick break. I'd love to hear more from both of you when we come back about what it will mean to cast that ballot in November. We are listening to newly naturalized U.S. citizens. It's our latest installment in our weekly voter roundtables between now and Election Day. So we'll have more when we come back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
Hi, On Point listeners. I'm poet and author Shinyi Pai. As you celebrate Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, I invite you to listen to the 10,000 Things podcast from KUOW and the NPR Network. 10,000 Things is a podcast about modern artifacts of Asian American life, ordinary objects that tell extraordinary stories and reveal something profound about the experience of being Asian in America. Find 10,000 Things from KUOW and the NPR Network, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. It's Wednesday. And so we were listening to, as we have been doing a lot of Wednesdays recently, American voters and their hopes and dreams for this country over the next 4 years. It's a weekly voter roundtable. Next week, we're going to be talking to, quote unquote, suburban voters, because you in the suburbs, wherever you think that might be, it's a pretty squishy term, but you are the focus of both campaigns by a lot. So suburban voters, first of all, however you define yourself, what do you think when you hear that presidential campaigns are pouring a lot of effort and money into courting your vote? For example, what do you think when President Trump says he's going to protect the suburbs from certain kinds of federally subsidized housing? What are your biggest hopes and dreams for your neighborhood, your community? Give us a call at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. And identify where you're from and why you think your location is technically a suburb, too, because I'm curious about what people think about that. That's for next week's show. Today, in our voter roundtable, we are listening to newly naturalized U.S. citizens who will be casting their very first votes as Americans in this fall's election. Fabiola Landeros is with us. She's from Albuquerque, New Mexico. She's a community organizer, originally from Mexico. Violeta Cruz Perez is also with us. She's a real estate agent, originally from Cuba, joining us from Tampa, Florida. And Violeta, before the break, you were talking about how you wanted to see communities be empowered, or you agreed with Fabiola's dream on that front. But I'm wondering, it sounds like you're also very, very, you are motivated by the efforts that you took to leave communist Cuba. So how does that play into who you think would be a good leader for the United States?
I think a good leader, a real good leader, needs love this country and the people more than anything. We need the leader. We don't need the person. Need the political for get a fan or money or anything. I don't know how I can express in English how I feel right now.
Violeta, can I just say something? I wanted to actually thank both of you because I know that it's quite challenging to do an interview live on the radio in not your native tongue. So I'm going to ask actually both of you one thing, and feel free to say no, okay? Feel free to say no. But Violeta, if it's easier for you to actually just express something right now, if it's important to you in Spanish, and Fabiola, if you could listen, would you actually just help translate a little bit? Would both of you feel comfortable doing that? It's totally okay if you say no.
I can do it.
Are you okay with that, Violeta? I don't want to force
anything. Yes, I'm so nervous. For me, it's... okay, cuando estoy nerviosa, a veces no puedo hablar correctamente el inglés. Yo lo entiendo más que lo hablo.
Okay, when she's nervous, she feels like she don't think she speaks a really good English. She's better understanding the speaking and saying.
Okay. So I'm not going to just use you as a translator, Fabiola. Don't worry. I want to hear your thoughts,
<It's>
too.
<okay. laughs>
But, you know, this country is becoming strongly multilingual and the languages are beautiful. So I want, most importantly, I want people to express themselves as confidently as they can. So, Violeta, here's my question for you. When I asked you who could lead the country down the direction that you want, who is that person and why will you be voting for that person?
Okay. The person I believe and I think deserve all our respect and unconditional support for me is Donald J. Trump.
Okay. And again, if you need to use Spanish, please go ahead. But why is it President Trump?
For his leadership, his patriotism, his love for his country and its people, his great knowledge to lead this country. For the last year, in short, he has done more in less than 4 years for this great country than the last president. His love for this country is so admirable for me because he's not a politician. And he only left his comfort zone to help his people, his country, without the need for money, fame, or glory, because he already have it.
So you don't see that same love of country in Joe Biden?
For me, no. We don't need the people talk too much and do nothing.
So Fabiola, how do you respond to that?
We'll say that for me is to put in someone to lead this country. And I will like to see someone to lead this country with love because that's one of the values that many people that I work with have. But at the same time, I don't feel I want someone on power that is constantly attacking. And I can say personal attack because I'm a woman, because I'm a worker, because I belong to the LGBTQ community, because I see the way that he don't see the value on the people that we see. Like when we talk about everything that president can do. He had the past for years to prove and to show the changes that this country needs. And what we're seeing is that our economy is the same. Our political are worse, I can say. And again, he don't think on us as a workers, because we are moving this economy right now during this pandemic. And we're seeing that not all the essential workers are essential when we talk about supporting the people who's here to, oh, it's going to be the people who's going to be electing the next administration.
Mm-hmm. You know, in the course of these conversations over the past many weeks, and especially today, because you, both of you and everyone who's on this show has made that tremendous effort to become an American, right? It's not something you were born into. You actively chose to change your life to do this, to be a part of this country. I'm listening very carefully, and what I'm hearing are, in terms of the big dreams that you have for your life and for your nation, there's so much commonality, right? I heard both of you say you want something better for your kids. But I'm also hearing yet that the path to achieving that same dream seems so wildly different to me. And that's the part that I'm trying to understand. So Violeta, tell me specifically, why do you think that four more years of President Trump, not so much what he gave up in his life, but what he's doing as president, why do you think he is the path to achieving that dream for your children?
For me, because he leader, for me, he's a leader, native leader. He know the economy. He know the peace. Sometimes I saw how some media change the reality of our president. But when you are clear in your ideas, and you know what is the future if socialists or communists are right here, trust me, your choice is your future. But you need to be very carefully. Don't listening all the people say. Sometimes the people just look for very light, don't deep. So we need a study. We need learning. We need search. All things. It's not just how the person talking. It's not how the person smile or whatever. So it's more than this.
Yeah. And Fabiola, same question for you. Why do you think a Biden administration is the path to achieving the dreams you were talking about?
I'm not saying that Biden is the path to achieve what we need. What I'm saying is that we are the path to achieve what we need. We just need someone that is going to work with us to do it. We need to have someone who's going to be listening to me. And it doesn't matter if I'm a woman of color, or if I'm a part of the Black community, of the LGBTQ community. I'm a human. And just because of that, I have the right to be heard and to have the right to be fought for, because we're seeing that a lot of things are at stake right now. And at least for me, being a mom of a brown kid, a woman, and me being part of these communities, I see that if we have another 4 years of this administration, things only gonna get worse for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, Fabiola Landeros from Albuquerque, New Mexico, community organizer. Fabiola, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And Violeta Cruz Perez from Tampa, Florida, a real estate agent originally from Cuba. Violeta, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
We've got one more newly naturalized U.S. citizen to hear from in this hour. Vadim Ostrovsky joins us from Richmond, Virginia. He's a sales manager and originally from Ukraine. Vadim, welcome to you.
Hi, Magna. How are you?
I'm doing really well and actually quite feeling very inspired about this nation. Newly naturalized citizens always do that to me. When did you become a citizen?
I became a citizen in December of 2019.
December of 2019. And what motivated you to do that?
Well, you know, I started the journey in the United States back in 1997, coming from Ukraine. It was about 6 years after USSR fell apart. And it's been, you know, I've become, I guess, I'd like to think that I was all along United States citizen. Then, you know, December was just a formal getting the blue passport. But, yeah, America is a great country. I strongly believe in the American dream, although, you know, you can possibly say it's not as widely available to as many people as before. But everything that this country is about inspires me and motivates me and motivated me to become a U.S. citizen. So
every immigrant that comes to this country carries with them the experience of their home nations or their previous nations. And hopefully the collection of that experience makes us as the United States better. So what would you say are the experiences of growing up in Ukraine that are informing sort of how you see your new nation, how you see the United States today?
Yeah, one of the ladies came from Cuba, and she talked about communism a little bit. So, you know, when I left, well, I guess my life has been disrupted in a big way when USSR fell apart. And I still remember some of the things that would take place before USSR fell apart. And you know, it was quite a unanticipated fall, and the life under Soviet Union. In the Republic of Ukraine, you know, just some of the things that I recall now, you know, there was everybody was living sort of an Orwellian world, and there was a lot of propaganda, there was a lot of lies, and really those lies served to, for a small part of the population, you know, the Politburo, the political elite, to really suck the population dry and give them nothing in return for getting everything. And that was really one of the things that, as I came to learn more about the United States, was really inspirational, how people here are, in a sense, equal. Now, there is a socioeconomic divide sometimes that divides people, but, you know, the right for the right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness is equal for everybody, you know, whether you're a billionaire or whether you're a janitor. So I think that's really, and it's not just words, it really does exist. And unfortunately, we see elements of how those liberties and the life and pursuit of happiness get sometimes taken away from people.
Can you talk more about that, Vadim? Because I wonder if you feel like in coming to the United States and becoming a citizen, that those, as you said, those Orwellian and authoritarian experiences that you had in Ukraine, have you escaped them fully?
I've escaped them fully. However, I haven't really escaped it sort of adjacent to my life, so I don't experience it now. However, I, you know, the world experiences that, you know, if you just take a look at Ukraine again, you know, just being born there and having my family there and my friends there, you know, I keep an eye on Ukraine, and Ukraine has been in the midst of a battle of good between good and evil, Putin versus the people of Ukraine, so to speak. You know, and I've kept a close eye to what's been happening there. And unfortunately for people of Ukraine, and I know that this is, some listeners may not think it's relevant, but I think it is. You know, people of Ukraine have suffered tremendously from a small group of elites taking away their life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, so to speak. Yeah. And just seeing that in the revolution of 2014, where people stood up and put their lives down on the line to fight for these values that are really inherent to the American society.
So, Vadim, I've just got like a minute left, and I want to try to sneak in two questions, okay? So forgive
me, please.
But first of all, Are you confident in the strength of America's democracy? Are you concerned about?
I am truly confident that we're going to survive. We're going to survive this period. This is a really very dangerous point that we're at. But I really think people here are amazing and good, and unfortunately, we just have leadership in the country who inspires the worst in people, and from my perspective, that will have to go.
And can you fit it in 10 seconds what your hope is for America for the next 4 years?
Yes, get together, win to 2020 for Joe Biden, start healing all of the rifts that came about in the last 4 years and maybe even longer than that, and then focus on creating a more equitable society where people are not afraid to go to a doctor and don't have to work for a minimum wage.
Well, Vadim Ostrovsky, originally from Ukraine, thank you so much for joining us, Vadim.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate the opportunity.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes.
Can Profit Motive Save the Planet is a company that takes the climate into account a better investment? How about one that pays workers a living wage and champions transparency and board diversity? That's the idea of ESG, or environmental social governance.
Sounds like a wonderful story. You can make more money, you can save the planet at the same time. Almost no one is going to turn that down.
It's a story that Andy King of Questrom and Veet Henish of the Wharton School challenged during a recent event at Questrom. Professor King played the critic, who says these are problems for regulation to solve, not markets.
As a famous economist said to me, you can't fix externalities with the profit motive, because the profit motive is not linked to externalities. Externalities are the byproduct of pursuing profits, so you can't fix them by getting people to even look harder at profits.
Meanwhile, Veet emphasized that ESG can be an important part of the solution.
Regulation matters, and we need better regulation. And we need to reallocate trillions of dollars of capital over time to the climate transition alone, forgetting social justice, racial justice, and other ESG issues. We're going to need the profit motive for that. No government regulation is going to reallocate tens of trillions of dollars of capital alone. It's going to be investors who are looking at current government regulation and future government regulation, and trying to connect the dots.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.